The following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Good morning and welcome. Happy Easter. Happy Resurrection Sunday. I just want to say, as I was thinking about this morning, about the passage that we just read, about what we are celebrating, the significance of what we are celebrating this morning, I am incredibly grateful for this moment with you. I was just overcome this week just thinking about who might be in the room, different backgrounds, different stories, different experiences, different expectations. Many of us perhaps, who are a part of this church or a church, others of us who are not. Many of us in this room who really do indeed believe in the resurrection of Jesus, perhaps. Some of us in this room who do not. And I just want you to know that I am grateful that you are in this place today. I'm grateful to be with you. I'm grateful that together we can think about, meditate upon, and hear about this man named Jesus, whom we believe is not dead, is not myth, is not legend, but rather is real, alive, present, working throughout the world, working in our lives, and he is coming back. It just blows my mind to think that there are millions of people all around the globe this weekend celebrating this truth. Jesus Christ has risen from the dead. Man, what a thought. What a privilege. Truth is, there's many different responses to that truth. Many responses beyond worship and awe and wonder. There's many that are, you know what, outright opposed to the idea that Jesus is indeed alive. There's some who are angry and embittered at the notion of following Jesus, let alone believing in a Jewish Messiah that would die for the sins of the world and 3 days later rise again. And then some people hear the news of the resurrection of Jesus and go, oh, okay, whatever. And it's not that you can just see the look on their face, whether it be in a Sunday worship service like this on Easter Sunday, but in the totality of their lives, it's just like, oh, whatever. Like, if you want to believe that, you can believe that, but I just don't get it. I just don't understand the implications of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. And I just want you to know, regardless of the extent to which you believe that Christ is risen this morning or not, I'm really thankful that you chose to come and be with us today. So here's what I want to invite you into for the next few moments together. We're going to look at these 8 verses together. We're just going to walk through them. I'm going to walk through 8 verses with you, and we are going to be confronted with 2 things in this passage. And in this confrontation, what I want to do is just wrestle with the idea of what millions of people not only confess and worship on this day, but what millions of people are banking the entirety of their lives upon. And I want you to know, as we walk through these 8 verses, you and I are going to be confronted. I want you to know, you individually this morning are going to be confronted in mind and heart with the words of Mark to us about the resurrection of Jesus. You and I individually and collectively are going to be engaged right where we are. 8 verses, 2 ways we're confronted, 1 question that all of us have to answer. You ready? Mark 16, verse 1. When the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go and anoint him. Three women. We've already been introduced to these 3 women in chapter 15. This is Mary Magdalene, Mary, mother of James, and Salome. Chapter 15, in fact, tells us that these three women were eyewitnesses of Jesus' crucifixion. If you read on in chapter 15, it will tell us that these women followed Jesus throughout Galilee. So they ministered to Jesus. They journeyed with Jesus. They saw him walk this earth. They saw him do ministry. They saw him die. They saw him buried. And now we're told very early on that Sunday morning, they're buying spices to bring to the tomb. Verse 2. Very early on the first day of the week, when the sun had risen, they went to the tomb. And go, well, why are they going to the tomb? In one sense, these women, as I just told you, who knew Jesus, journeyed with Jesus, ministered to Jesus, saw him crucified, saw him buried in this tomb, they're going to pay their respects to him. There's a sense of reverence that would compel these women to go and inform this burial rite upon the body of Jesus. These spices are essentially perfume. They would pour perfume over the body, and then they would lay the perfume around the body as a burial rite for the purpose of offsetting the odor of decomposition. That's what's going on. That's why they're going. But I want you to notice their expectation. They're expecting death. Verse 3. And they were saying to one another, who is going to roll away the stone for us from the entrance of the tomb? Seems like a very logical question to ask, right? They saw the stone roll to close the tomb. Now they're wondering, who's going to open the tomb? These are massive rocks, 6 feet tall, weighed hundreds of pounds. So how in the world are we going to be able to push that back? Verse 4. And looking up, they saw that the stone had been rolled back. It was very large. Mark's very descriptive. Large rock. And entering the tomb, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, dressed in a white robe. And they were alarmed. Now, Mark doesn't key us in on this, but from other gospel accounts, we know that this is an angel. In Jewish literature, the phrase young man in white robe is how they would often describe angels. So I want you to keep the perspective with me, okay? These women who walk with Jesus, saw him killed, saw him buried, come into the tomb, expecting Jesus in a closed tomb, find an open tomb with an angelic being, and they are alarmed, as they should be. Right? Seems like a pretty reasonable response to me. We're going to go perform this rite of this burial rite, and we're going to pay our respects to Jesus. And yet the stone is open, and they see this man. One gospel writer accounts that he looks like a man of lightning, radiating with light. And we don't really know from the alarm, that word in the original is pretty difficult to translate. We don't know if their response is positive or negative, but here's what we can concur. They're freaking out. This is a freaking out moment for them. Look at verse 6. And he said to them, do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. You want to see? Come in. See the place where they laid him. So they're shocked. They're perplexed. They're alarmed. Angel says, don't be. Don't be. Don't be alarmed. And then he, the angel, gives them perspective. I know why you're here. Now, I don't know all the intentions of your heart on why you came, and it's likely that those motives and intentions are incomplete, but I know why you walked to this place. And I know who you're looking for. It's Jesus. And just in case we're doubting the Jesus of what anyone is thinking, it's Jesus of Nazareth, the one you journeyed with. The one who was crucified, and you saw it. You were there. Everyone in this moment, you look at the end of chapter 15 to verse 6 of chapter 16, everyone knows that Jesus was crucified and he died. And the angel goes, women, I know why you're here. I know who you're looking for. You're in the right place, but he's not here. Come in, look around. See the very place where they laid him. He's not here because he's risen. He was dead, but he's not dead. He's alive. And this is where I just briefly want to pause, because this is where I think you and I are first confronted with what Mark is informing us of in the conclusion of his letter. Mark is confronting us with this. The resurrection of Jesus is historically reliable. In other words, Mark is recording history. He wants us to know, he wants those who are reading these words to know that this indeed really happened. Not writing myth, not writing fairy tale, not writing legend. Man, one of the things that stood out to me as we've studied this gospel for the last year as a church family, one of the things that stood out to me is Mark is very vague on naming people. Like, he does not really name drop throughout his letter. He's super vague on the details. And the reason he writes that way is because Mark wants to put all the attention squarely on Jesus. And yet, Mark 16, he's name dropping all over the place. That's fascinating to me. Why is he doing that? Because these are real people with real expectations. These women were alive at the time this letter is being circulated. And Mark is saying, hey, if you don't believe me, if you don't believe the account that Jesus is alive, go talk to these women. If you want to know the details and the nuances of what they saw and what they felt and what they experienced, go talk to them. These women, they walk with Jesus. They minister to him. They saw him crucified and buried. They saw an empty tomb. And they know he's risen. And for all the theories and the conspiracies about the reality of the resurrection of Jesus and the accounts of the gospel writers to that event, if Mark is making this up, if Mark is making up this story, I can guarantee you Mark would not have written it this way. You go, well, why? Because no one comes to the tomb expecting Jesus to be alive. No one. Think about that for a moment. The guys that journeyed with Jesus so closely for all of these years, retrace Mark's steps back 16 chapters. The guys that sat with him front row and center are not even here. They don't show up. Five different occasions, Jesus tells them, I'm going to die, I'm going to rise again. Three of those five occasions, he tells them, it'll be 3 days. Three times. Hey guys, I'm going to die, I'll be buried. 3 days, 3 days, I'm going to rise again. I'm going to die, I'll be buried. 3 days, 3 days, I'm going to rise again. He tells them three times. And he does, he dies. They lay him in the tomb. And on this day, 3 days, they don't even show up. Because they're not expecting resurrection. In fact, no one's expecting resurrection. And if this is a fabricated story with zero historical validity, I can guarantee you Mark wouldn't have wrote it this way. Don't you think the guys who are closest to him would have been at the tomb celebrating with him? My point in saying that is this. The resurrection was as inconceivable for the disciples and these women as it is for you and me. And the only possible reason for the presence of these women that Mark names twice, five different times in eight lines, is that these eyewitness accounts is that they were really there and they reported what they saw. The stone has been rolled away. The tomb is empty. And the angel declares that Jesus has risen. As we keep reading history beyond this moment of Mark 16, here's what we know. After the report of Jesus rising from the dead, you have both Jews and Greeks Not friends, but enemies. You have Jews and Greeks both consumed with the idea that Jesus Christ, their Messiah, lived, died, and beat death. And within 2 centuries, this message spread throughout the known world. And you can read history today. There is no logical explanation why millions of people who had zero expectation that Jesus was going to rise from the dead now worship this God, let alone are willing to bank their very lives on this message, even die for this message. The only logical explanation is that he indeed is risen. And Mark is going to great lengths to tell us Jesus, the Son of God, he stepped into history, he lived, he died, he defeated death. And he walked out of the tomb. Now, I want to be real practical for every one of you in the room today. You must deal with Jesus. You must. If I had the time, and it wouldn't be awkward and off-putting, I would come and look at you square in the eye and tell you that you must deal with Jesus. He's either alive or he's not. And if he's not alive, you've wasted your money. By money, I mean the clothes that, if you bought new clothes for a day like today, which is great, you've wasted gas money and you've wasted time coming to this place. But if he's alive, it changes everything. If he's alive, it changes everything. And the second thing underneath this historical, verifiable reality that Mark is bringing us in on is the second confrontation that I want you to see in the text. The resurrection of Jesus is not only historically reliable, the resurrection of Jesus is personally transforming. Look at verse 7. But go, the angel says to these women, tell his disciples and Peter. Tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you to Galilee. And there you will see him just as he told you. Go, tell the disciples and Peter. Why is he naming Peter? Peter's a disciple. Hey, go tell the disciples. One of the things that stands out to me as I have journeyed through this gospel is that the people to whom Jesus invites to journey with him, they don't always get it right. In fact, often they blow it. The weakness and the fragility of these followers of Jesus is very apparent as you observe their journey of following him. I think of the moments where Jesus does the miraculous and the disciples are all front row to it. And Jesus shows them his divine power and they are amazed. They're filled with wonder. And then immediately he puts them in situations where the very thing that they just witnessed should inform what they're now walking through. And yet they act as though they've never been in his presence or seen his power. Now it's easy to judge them for that, but then I think about my own journey of faith. I think of moments where, in particular, on the night of his betrayal, he has a meal with his disciples and he predicts that each one of them in some way is going to abandon him. He says, one of you will betray me, one of you will deny me, but all of you in some way are going to fall away. That's intriguing, right? These are his closest friends. I think about Peter, filled with love and passion and audacity, loyalty. He makes several claims about his devotion and commitment to Jesus, only to find himself face to face with his own self-deception. Three times, he denies Jesus. And he doesn't just deny being associated with Jesus, he denies that he even knows the man. And here we are, Jesus, risen from the dead, just as he said he would. And the first communication is, where are my friends? I want to see them again. I'm not abandoning them. I'm not walking away from them. I'm not finished with them. Hey, go tell them that I'm going to be exactly in the place I've already told them I'm going to be when I rise from the dead. I'm going to be in Galilee, and I want to see them. I want to sit with them. Go tell them, tell them, tell them, tell them and Peter. The last time we saw Peter, he was devastated and broken. And to be honest with you, if Jesus does not call Peter by name, if the word and invitation eventually that reaches these disciples isn't, hey, Peter, Jesus called for you specifically, I don't know if Peter ever shows up in Galilee. He's broken and crushed. And Mark wants us to see that Jesus is risen, the tomb is empty, and the thing on his mind is his crushed and broken friend. Now think about that. Think about that for a moment. For all Peter knows, his failure will define the rest of his life. In this moment, Peter's identity, it rests squarely upon this: I denied Jesus, I betrayed Jesus. That's Peter's identity. But the risen Jesus wants Peter to meet him in Galilee because Peter needs to see that the expression upon his face is not one of condemnation, but rather restoration. I love Luke's account of this particular story. Luke tells us that when Peter denied Jesus for the third time, that Jesus and Peter lock eyes. They look at each other. And maybe you're thinking, well, Jesus' look towards Peter must have been of disappointment. It must have been shame. No, it was a look of pure and holy love, and Peter could not bear to look at that pure and holy love because of his sin. And what I would submit to you this morning from the significance of this historical, verifiable reality that Jesus is indeed alive, Peter needs to lock eyes with this risen Jesus a second time. You want to know why? Because Jesus never intended for Peter to look away in the first place. Jesus never intended for Peter to be defined by his sin. Jesus never intended for Peter to walk away. And Jesus is going to great lengths here to call his disciples to Galilee, Peter specifically, a second time, because Jesus wants Peter to know, I want you, Peter. I want to be with you. Peter, I see you. I see your sin. I see it all the way down to the bottom. I think about J.I. Packer, who says, there is tremendous relief in knowing that his love for me is based at every point on prior knowledge of the worst about me, and yet he loves me still. Peter, I want you. I want to be with you. I want you to be with me. My purposes for you have not wavered or changed. And you can go read this in John's gospel. They eventually do meet. Risen Jesus, Peter. Peter gets word. They eventually meet in Galilee. And their eyes do indeed lock. Jesus embraces Peter, restores him, and it absolutely transforms his life. You see, the second look from Jesus reminds Peter, and it reminds you and me this morning, that at the cross, Jesus gave his life as a ransom for many. We deserve death. Peter deserved death. But Jesus steps in and takes our place. On the very night of his betrayal, he told his disciples that he was going to pour out his blood for them, and his blood would be the seal of his eternal commitment to them. Hey, Peter, Peter, your sin, your failure deserves wrath, but I took that for you. Hey, Peter, look at me. I want you to remember what I endured on the cross. I did that for you. I did that for many. I took the full weight of sin upon my shoulders so I could be crushed for you. And then they buried me. You go, well, how do we know this is true? How do we know that God truly forgives sin? How do we know that we have truly been set free? Because 3 days later, he gets up and he walks out of that tomb. That's how. That's how Jesus can look at Peter and embrace him, restore him, continue to journey with him. And that's how we know he's not finished with us. The resurrection of Jesus means that he's not abandoned you. It means that he's not turned his back on you. It means that he's calling for you and me to meet him in a sense, maybe to meet him in this place on this day. And here's what the resurrected Jesus is saying to us. I see you. I want to see you. I want to be with you. I embrace you. I want to restore you. Walk with me. Let me embrace you. The resurrection of Jesus has something to say about failure, about brokenness, about disappointment, about misplaced identity, about shame and guilt. That whatever it is, whatever the sin, maybe the ones you can name this morning but are still crippled by, maybe the ones that you can't name because it's too painful to even acknowledge, or whatever's been done to you, the invitation for us on this resurrection morning is to let the God that wants to be with us actually be with us and embrace us and transform us and restore us and journey with us. There's one more verse, verse 8. And they went out and fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had seized them. And they said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. It's a strange place to end your letter. It's a strange place to end the account of the resurrection of Jesus. Go tell. But they don't go and tell. From Mark's perspective, and this is how he ends his letter, we don't really find out here whether or not these women eventually go and tell. So the question we're left pondering is, are they actually going to go and proclaim the resurrection of Jesus? These women come to the tomb looking for death, and they don't find it, but in fear and amazement, the angel tells them the news of what they should have been expecting all along. And I look at these women who come with respect and reverence at the beginning of this passage, and then at the end, I look at them really wrestling with what do I do with this? It's really easy to judge them, critique them. If this is the only account we have, then... But then I see myself in them. Can I explain to you what I think is going on here? For 16 chapters, Mark has been inviting us to this question: who is Jesus? Who is he? Who is this man? Who is he? What is he like? Like, who is the man that nature obeys his voice? Who is the man that demons run and flee? Who is this man that can heal and comfort the sick while simultaneously transforming the deepest part of an individual? Who is this man? And these women, they're faced with the same question that you and I are also faced with. The news about the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. What are we going to do with that? That's the question. What are you going to do with Jesus? That's the question. Confronted with the historical reality of it, confronted with the transformation and restoration of it that others claim not only viable, but it's their story to tell. Jesus has changed me. He's transformed me. What are we going to do with that? On one hand, it's easy to dismiss it. And there are 1,001 ways to dismiss the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And be careful what I say here. I want to be clear. You can dismiss Jesus and still be highly religious. You can do all the religious stuff and still dismiss him. You can dismiss him religiously, non-religiously, nonchalantly, or with arrogance and pride and anger. But here's what I need you to know. Here's what Mark wants us to know. At the end of the day, dismissing, ignoring the implications of the resurrection of Jesus in whatever form you may is still dismissing the person of Jesus. What are you going to do with him? There's another way. There's another way, like these women, over time, what we learn is that they do eventually go and tell. And what I love about that is, over time, you and I can allow this person, this resurrected king, whose name is Jesus, we can allow him and what he accomplished on our behalf to define our lives. Over time, you can step out of trying to rationalize away the person of Jesus, and you can step into faith. Not blindly, but willingly step into faith that he did indeed come to this earth, that he did indeed live the perfect life, that he did indeed die the death we deserve, and that he did indeed rise again to redeem, restore, and to transform your life. Do you know that all of the people that we've read about this morning in this story, all of them will eventually die a gruesome death because of their refusal to recant the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus? What are you going to do with him? What are you going to do with Jesus? Like, what if this is true? What if he's really alive today? What if he actually conquered death? What if he actually did what he said he was going to do? What if he is indeed risen? I'm going to invite the worship team back up, and we're going to have an opportunity to respond to the two things we've been confronted with this morning. I'm also going to invite our prayer team to move towards the back. If you don't mind, you're here and a part of our prayer team. We'd love for you just maybe to stand along the back of the room. What are you going to do with Jesus? Perhaps you're here this morning and you might say, man, I want to believe in the resurrection of Jesus. Like, I legitimately long to believe that this is true. Or maybe even on one hand, you acknowledge that I'm not even sure that I do, but I'm looking, I'm searching. And in all the ways that I have sought to find meaning and purpose and hope in this life, I haven't found it. And man, the beauty of the invitation of the risen Jesus this morning is, let the one who knows you and sees you and wants to be with you, let him be with you. Let your name be the one that he calls out in this text today. Go and tell my church and your name, that I want to see him. And I want to meet you, and I know your story, and I know it's filled with a lot of hurt and a lot of aches and a lot of brokenness, but I want to meet you there, and I want you to know, I see you, I see you, I see you all the way down the bottom, but I'm not turning away. And so the beautiful invitation to you this morning in the gospel and the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus is that if you don't have a relationship with Jesus, you can have a relationship with Jesus today. Maybe you're here this morning and you would say, if you're honest, I want to be restored in my relationship with Jesus. Maybe in a sense I've wondered at a distance, I've followed at a distance, and I'm in a place of apathy. I'm at a place of, I don't know anymore. I don't long to be in his presence. I don't long to be with his people. The things of God and the things of Jesus and the way in which Jesus is going, that doesn't really affect me anymore. Here's what I want you to know that's true about the resurrection of Jesus. He still wants to be with you. So let him be with you. Let him meet you and embrace you and let you know that he's not finished with you yet. That he's not turned his back on you and he still has good purposes and a good plan for you. And he wants to journey with you to that end. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pray. Our team's going to sing a couple songs. And I'm going to invite you this morning, if you believe God is speaking to you, maybe to move during the next couple songs to the back. We've got men and women all over this room that would love to pray with you. That would love to welcome you into the family of God and love to welcome you into the very real possibility of restored relationship with a risen Jesus. So would you go ahead and stand with me this morning? And here's what I want to say as I pray. Here's what I know is at work. The enemy and all of his lies is at work right now in your mind and heart, telling you it's okay. This is just another, like, I've made it here. I've heard this message. Yeah, I get it. I'll just go on about I'll move on. Don't let pride or the enemy keep you from having a moment in the presence of God among his people to actually experience real transformation. If you're here this morning, you have to deal with, we have to deal with Jesus, the risen Jesus. And he didn't just rise from the dead as an historical thing that we can rally around once a year. If he's alive, it transforms. And there's a bunch of people in this room that can bear witness to that reality. Let that be your story starting today. Father, thank you. Thank you that it was your eternal will and purpose to redeem a people to yourself, to call a people back to you, and that in that eternal will and purpose that you sought to send your son to step into the brokenness of humanity, to walk among us, to live in our place, to die in our place, to rise again so that we could experience new life and freedom and hope and forgiveness, and that we could now, until the very end, until the day that we do see you face to face, that we could journey with you by faith, becoming new, because we are new in Jesus. Spirit of God, I pray that as we have a moment to respond, would you not only speak, but would you compel joyful obedience to those in the room today that perhaps don't know you, that today is the day that they're going to come to know you, to be embraced by you. And then others of us in this room who do know you but need to be restored into fellowship with you, that we wouldn't let pride or the prospect of being seen keep us from experiencing the wide and welcome embrace of Jesus to restore us. You move, you speak. May we respond. In Christ's name I pray. Amen.
Thank you for joining for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child the repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you, so we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.